Blog Talk Radio.
Letting that great lead run fade out there. That was Pete Fry on the intro, and of course you have tuned in to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 165, coming at you live from the bluegrass state of Lexington, Kentucky. This is Stephen Zimmer with my cohorts and partners in crime from Tennessee, Daniel Dark from Indianapolis, Indiana, in the nick of time, Michael West. Good evening, my friends.
How's the time bandit doing tonight?
Oh, yeah. How is the time bandit doing tonight, Mr. West? I don't hear him, do you?
I don't hear him.
Uh-oh.
Michael.
Just
did you
break
kill him?
In on us? No, I didn't. I swear, I got it. He's not muted or anything. I promise. Oh man, but it's a great week, and we got a great guest for you tonight, and some stuff to talk about. I know Michael is going to want to talk about a certain audio book that is coming up, and of course, I'll let him cover that. But I'd like to say also give a shout out to Matthew Longville. Yes, Matt Longville, he great guy with the Business Leadership and You podcast. Again, I got to be on that show as a guest, talking about the nuances and some various types of social media and their use for small businesses. It's a show that caters to general businesses, so you know it's not just about the creative businesses, so it's for everybody. But it's a really, really cool show, and on this topic, we had a great about 40-minute conversation. So check that out when you get a chance. Again, the podcast is called Business Leadership and You, and that's Matt Longville of Longville Consulting. So, yeah, it's been a good week, Daniel, and I know you're busy because there's some new material that came in that Holly has been starting to read through. So I know you're on the move.
Yeah, trying to get on the move with it and everything. You know, if you can't turn a book in on time, turn it in when you can. You know, that's
Well, turn it in when it's ready. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, yes, I know. I'm not trying to dampen the daylights. Deadlines are important. Get my tongue stopped being tied there. But deadlines, yes, they are important. But yeah, it's always best if you know the author is turning in the work that they are satisfied with, as opposed to you know turning something half done. But they got to
turning in trash.
Right. Yeah. So you know, we'll have to have a show. We have a good argument about deadlines versus that situation. But in this case, though, it's fine. And the best thing is to get your best work in. So, I mean, I'm just glad to see it. Because I know you've been researching, working, traveling, and researching and writing and been working hard on this one.
Yeah, this is going – this one I'm working actually harder than I did on my first one. I'm trying to get things, you know, as accurate as I can, because they're real things here in America, where mm-hmm. we grew up at and everything. So you won't, you know, when it's the first one, you know, about Jack the Ripper and everything, I had read so much about Jack the Ripper, I felt like I knew that scenario a little bit more. You know, this one, I'm going into different things that I'm having to do a lot of research for to make sure I get it right, instead of just throwing out, like I said, garbage to the world.
Yeah. Right.
And you know that's what I'm having to work on right now. Now going back to your business and everything, I want to ask a question. I've been seeing these things about Imaginarium, where people are becoming sponsors to Imaginarium.
Oh, yes. Oh,
individual
yes.
sponsors
yeah.
and all that type of stuff?
Yes.
How would one go about becoming a sponsor to Imaginarium?
Well, we have a new thing this year that several people and companies have actually taken advantage of, and it's not, you know, too bad. It's only like $50, and you get to become what we call an individual patron of Imaginarium, and it's something that today we announced E.J. Stevens. E.J. is a great author, been to Imaginarium before, definitely knows what we're about, and that's so cool when we get support from somebody, you know, really understands our mission. And, you know, we've had companies like the Friendship State Bank, and then Tamara Lehman Insurance from Indiana is coming, and we're going to be announcing them. And we've had, you know, a number of them. And it's on the site. It's under our under our official sponsorships. We have a sponsorships menu, and but under the official sponsorships menu on our on the Imaginarium website, there is an option for becoming an individual patron, and you can actually just secure a patron spot right there, and you know, you get your logo displayed in the site, and then if you have a link, we, you know, we also include that too, and then there's some other recognition that goes with it, and you know, it does help us because we run this as low cost as possible to the public. I mean, we're given something that, you know, I mean, it's not being cocky to say it. I mean, but we give stuff that, you know, has more content than $300, $400, $500 writing conferences. And, you know, and our total weekend registration is only $75. And so, I mean, it's a deal. And so, but on the other side of the coin, you know, we still got to try to raise some resources to expand, to grow, to add new things, to, you know, be able to bring in extra guests, things like that. So it definitely
right.
helps us a bunch, and more advertising too. So that, yeah, that does help. And yeah, it's definitely every bit counts when you're like us, and we don't have any major government grants. We don't have any, you know, we have some great sponsors, official sponsors, but we don't have, you know, like some big giant like Coca-Cola, you know, it's giving us a huge, you know, sponsorship. So, I mean, you know, it's, you know, so it's a challenge to run it every year. I mean, took us 3 years. 3 years we took losses. Year four we broke even. Last year we, you know, hit just right at the break even point as well. So you know, it's, you know, it's tough. It's tough. So yeah, these do help a lot. So yeah, thanks. Thank you for asking about that.
Yeah, that's just one of the things that I, you know, was trying to find out about. I know Holly's been working heavily on the programming this year, on what, you know,
oh, yeah.
who all's going to be there and everything like that. And,
massive.
You know, and, you know, considering,
yeah.
you know, Imaginarium was voted, what, you know, number 100 or number one? Which one was it in the state of Kentucky?
Number one in Kentucky and second in the Southeast U.S., right behind the Atlanta's Writers Conference down in Atlanta. But we were second in the Southeast, according to the Writer magazine, and first in Kentucky.
And Writer magazine's been out for just a couple of minutes, so, you know, they may know what, you know, is happening in the world
yes.
of writing today.
Yeah, yeah, they know what's going on there for sure. And yes, that was, for those that didn't catch that was a little sarcasm there from Mr. Dark there, as far as a couple minutes. Yeah, they definitely know their stuff.
Yeah, that, you know, they, you know, I read Writer's Magazine all the time. That is one of the magazines I actually have come to my house, because I respect that magazine so much on the information that they give in there. Little plug for Writer's Magazine from the dark one. But just, you know, they may not want it, but they got it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the, you know, Imaginarium is, you know, my home. You know, even though I live in Nashville instead of, and I go to Killer Nashville, which was the first conference that I ever went to, you know, I still feel like that Imaginarium is my home conference, because that's where I've met the most friends and people that, you know, don't care about, you know, where you came from and all that stuff. They just want to know about you. which
well,
is, you know,
it's definitely,
right in
yeah,
the conference.
It's definitely got a group, and, you know, that definitely has gotten to know each other really well, and, you know, we all, you know, of course, enjoy seeing each other at other conferences and events, but, yeah, there definitely is a core family there, and, it and you know, it definitely grows a bit each year, and it's fun because, yeah, you get new faces every year, but you always are guaranteed of getting that that group that, you know, it's like Cheers, you know, you walk in, everybody knows your name kind of thing. And
mm-hmm.
that definitely goes, I think, a long way to, you know, the magic of Imaginarium for a lot of people. You know, and then that makes it fun and comfortable to meet the new folks and bring them in, you know, the new faces.
Yep.
So it works all around. It's definitely a
very
good vibe.
Cool.
There he is. Yes. And
hey!
Catch. Trouble with his audio early here, but that's Michael West on the phone. And I am tell you what, I'm gonna do our sponsor real quick because I want to give the floor to you, Michael, because you have some cool stuff to talk about before we bring our guest on a certain
okay.
audio book, and I want to let you have a chance to get a breather, get your thoughts together. But we have a new sponsor today. For the first time ever, Per Bastet Publications is a sponsor of the Star Chamber Show. So today, yeah, we're going to give you a little bit of information about them. And they got a little bit of a bigger ad in their sponsorship. So here they are. And let me give you some info about them. Per Bastet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 30 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bastet offers a little bit of everything from fantasy and science fiction to mysteries and thrillers, along with historical fiction, nonfiction, short story collections, and ghost stories. If you're looking to get hooked on a good series, try the Bell Star Chronicles, wherein Sandy is part of the job description, or Miller and Peele's Chicago Blues and New York Nights, buddy cop thrillers teaming an ex-football player and a vampire. Incidentally, check out San Francisco at Night, the new prequel featuring Peele the Vampire in the Wild West. There's the epic fantasy The Stage Trilogy, with its companion book of short stories, or get in on the ground floor with the life and death, but mostly the death, of Erica Flynn, the first book of the In Progress Underworld series. Per Bastet has standalone books too, like their newest release, The Wolves of Port Novo by Marian Allen, where the only people more dangerous than your enemies are your friends. You can find these titles and more at perbastetpublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at Indianapolis's Inca Junction in July, Lexington's Comic and Toy Convention Fall Fest in September, and Louisville's Imaginarium Convention in October. Per Bastet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. So there you go. Per Bastet, first time ever show sponsor on the Star Chamber Show with the great T. Lee Harris, the amazing Sarah Marion, and of course Marian Allen and everybody. I mean, they are just a great group. So love to have them. So
Very good.
We got our guest coming up next, but Michael, you've got to tell us about the audiobook real quick here.
All right. We did a audiobook version of my number one bestseller, Cinema of Shadows, and it recently completed production. It sounds amazing. The production quality on this is incredible, and the voice talent is amazing. And excuse me, I'm gonna sneeze there. just listening to it, it just really, it's enthralling, and it just really blew me away, and I wrote the damn thing, and it gave me chills at certain points. It's just that good. So I'm very excited about it, and I'm looking forward to everyone being able to hear it and get a chance to download it and hear it for themselves, and that should happen within the next 10 business days.
Yeah, as far as I know, yeah, we're just waiting on ACX to do their quality control review, and then once they do that, you know, we can, you know, the AI can be taken live. So it's within 10, 14 business days. Yeah, and that was last week. So.
And where will it all be available when it does go live?
Well, I wish Holly was on right now because she had been meticulous about all that. But I know it'll be available on Amazon Audible. It'll be available on iTunes. And there's a few more spots on that. But definitely on the major sites for sure. So, yeah, you'll be able to find us easily because it's project through ACX. So, yeah, they'll be on the main platforms for audiobooks. And I know I'm exploring a few more additional ones that are smaller, but yeah, those will be definitely added in.
Can I make the other announcement on what just got underway?
Well, of course you can.
Sure.
I can, Michael. we're not draconian here.
In addition to Cinema of Shadows, which is, of course, the it's not technically the first Harmony Indiana book, but it is the first one that was put out by Seven Star. And people read them in all different orders. Some people Star Wars it, you know, start in the middle and then work out from both ends. And some people,
right,
you know, Hobbit it or whatever. But it definitely isn't hurting anything for you to start reading and or listening to Cinema of Shadows. But my other series, the Legacy of the Gods series, which I am, of course, still madly, feverishly trying to beat George R. R. Martin and get the final book out of my series before he does his.
Oh, you got no problem.
The first...
Yeah. Don't worry.
The first book in that series, Poseidon's Children, has currently entered into production as an audiobook and should be available sometime this summer.
Yep. Yeah, it's an audiobook extravaganza for Michael West here going on. It's ready.
This,
get ready, audiobook fans.
Well, and you know, I this one was a hard one to cast just simply because anyone who's read The Legacy of the Gods knows that there is an enormous amount of characters in the series. And to find somebody who could get all the voices, and it's not only a you know, cast of thousands, but it's a global cast of thousands. So to get someone who can do the various accents and dialects of the characters from various parts of the world, it was a challenge. But I think that the gentleman that we found to do this series, you know, really just blew us away. And I can't wait. Just hearing the chunks I've heard so far, I just cannot wait for this one to be ready for everyone else to be able to hear this one as well.
Oh, yes. This could be good. I have heard the narrator in this one, and another phenomenal narrator, just like with Cinema of Shadows. I think got the perfect voices for both of them. So that's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
I couldn't agree more. And as I said before, Cinema Shadows, I mean, you know, I've listened to audiobooks before and heard some stellar voice actors, you know, do the voices. But you've got the narrator of this book not only doing the narration and doing it with you know, it seems like the further it goes in and as the action steps up, the urgency steps up in the narration also, which is amazing. And then also, especially when the demon and ghost aspects kick in, it's chilling. It really is chilling. So this is one that you're going to want to listen to with the lights on and hopefully not alone.
Right. Well,
as Holly can attest to.
Yes. Though definitely Holly's definitely pumped about these, though, for sure. I mean, she's very excited, and myself as well. But We will go ahead and bring our guest on for tonight. And tonight's guest actually will be talking about her debut novel, psychological thriller, Sandman. And this is a debut novel, so it's going to be kind of exploration of the process of being a newly published author. And I'd like to welcome Tammy Bird onto the Star Chamber Show. Tammy, you're online now.
Thank you. Hi, I'm glad to be here.
It's great
glad
to
have
hear
you, Tammy.
Great to hear you. Yes, welcome, welcome, and make yourself at ease. We're a laid back, fun bunch, and we'll take the conversation anywhere you want to take it. And but first, tell us a little bit about yourself and your novel Sandman, just so the audience can get a little familiarity with your work.
Sure, I actually am an older author. I did a panel last night, actually, Women Over 40 and Female Agency, so that tells you kind of where I am on the spectrum of age, which is a little bit different than many debut authors, but I got a late start. I actually dropped out of high school, started raising a family, did the mom thing for a while, got a divorce, did some other things, and decided much later in life to go back to school and to study writing and English in particular, and became an English instructor and went on to get my PhD in education, and wasn't sure. I knew I wanted to do something with writing and had always wanted to write, but had never really had the opportunity. And as my children have grown and gotten out of the house, I've had more time to spend on that passion. And I went to visit the Outer Banks, which is on the East Coast to North Carolina. And while we were there, we noticed that it was very quiet. We were there in October, and on the East Coast in October on the coast, it's chilly and there's not very many people there. And I made note that it was very empty. And the person that we were talking to in a little ice cream shop, he said, yeah, so quiet you could bury a body in the dunes and no one would ever know. And that was the little nugget that became Sandman a couple of years later. And I'm sure he didn't know at the time that he was creating a novel in my head when we had the discussion. But I started writing it at that time, and it takes place in the Outer Banks.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to North Carolina. I went back to the island several times during the writing of Sandman just to get a better idea of the place.
Which island were you on
out
there?
What's going on? Buxton
okay.
Beach. It's just across the water from Ocracoke.
Yep.
And
we used to have a place out there on Topsail.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's gorgeous out there. I love it. So we went back several times while I was writing. So the premise for Sandman came from that, and it is a psychological thriller that deals with a small group of people on this small island that suddenly realize during a storm where a tornado has come through and destroyed several of the homes on the island that there's more buried beneath the sand than they ever suspected, and it changes the life of this entire small town tremendously. And one of the EMT workers who's working the storm and finding survivors from the storm is one of the ones that finds the first body buried in the dune and realizes that she has a special connection with the person that's just been found. And so now she has to work with others to figure out who on their island is not as they appear to be and has not been who they appear to be for many years. So that's the idea behind it and how I came to start writing it.
Very nice. And now, is this part of first of a series? It is a standalone. And then the second question, is you self-publish or is it with a publisher?
I'll answer the second one first. It's with a publisher, Flashpoint Publishing. And as for the first one, it was originally, I had thought about it as a standalone, but as I began the writing process, I realized that there is a particular character in Sandman who needs his own story as we progress, because he actually is someone who helps Sandman somewhere along the way. And then when Sandman, the serial killer, the media has deemed him Sandman, when he's gone, and no long, when he no longer can work with him, he doesn't have anything to do. And so we have to figure out what's going to happen to him. And my publisher has asked that we kind of carry that thread into the next of the series. So it'll probably end up being three books total.
Nice, nice. Or you never know. It might be one of those things where, you know, you have some, you know, New York Times bestselling mystery authors and thriller authors where, you know, they end up having like 40 books in a series. Who knows? It might,
that'd be
might
sweet.
Continue to grow. You never know. You never know.
I would never say no, that's for certain, right?
I mean, gosh, I was just reading an article about Danielle Steele, and it blew me away because I didn't realize she's written 179 books at this point, or, I mean, published. I mean, that's 179 published at this point. And I mean, there's it can get prolific.
Crazy.
You know, you never know. You never know. Of course, she said she writes up to 20 hours a day. So, yeah, that's a pretty intensive writing schedule, I have to say.
Yeah, I was reading about her, too, some time ago, and how she plans her books and how many she has planned out at a time,
mm-hmm.
and how if she gets stuck on the one she's working on right now, she goes and fleshes out one of the future ones. I don't know. That would just mess with my head, I think.
Well, you know, Stephen King used to say that he would write a book in the morning and then, do a different one in the afternoon. And to me, that would just totally – I mean, as a reader, when I start reading a book, I'm totally into that book. And same thing as a writer. You know, if I'm with a certain set of characters, it would just mess with everything if I had to pull out of their heads and go into another group of characters' heads.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I can write a short story. Short stories. And so I can do that if I'm working on something for an anthology or something like that. But I guess because I've been doing short stories for so long, those come very easily to me. So it's much easier to, if I'm having trouble with a novel, to step out and work on a short story. I can get into those characters because I can get rid of them very quickly. And flesh
right,
them out
exactly.
of my head and get back
yeah.
into the
it's,
novel.
You've got
yeah.
the, you know, the as a reader and as a writer, you have a lot less invested in characters in a short story than you do in characters in a novel.
Yes. But I can only do one novel at a time. I can barely keep up with, you know, who had green eyes, who had brown eyes, who, you know, whose first name did I change, who has a cat, what happened to the cat, is somebody feeding the cat, where's the cat, you know. I can't imagine trying to have those in three or four different pieces going on at the same time.
Well, I had one recently where I had everybody go into one location, and then I looked back because the last time we really mentioned the name of this location was like two books ago. So I went back and I said, let me get, you know, how did I describe this before? And then I realized that it had a totally different name in the previously published book. So I had to fix that.
Yeah. So can you imagine over three or four books trying to figure out what a place looked like or what place you had the people or, but you know, who kissed who where and who shot who where and who jumped to the
right.
in this spaceship and on this planet and who? Yeah, no.
No, it's definitely you definitely almost have to keep a scorecard on those kind of details when you're doing a series for sure, because that's it can happen very easily. Those kind of details along a string of books.
Book.
You don't have to worry about it as much if you do it like I do, where you just kill everybody, so, you know, there's nobody left. You know. You've got the main character, that's it.
Yeah, I was working on a book once, and one of the stories in the book related back to kind of a side story just that was, like, briefly mentioned in a previous book. And so I was going through and telling the story. Well, then one of my pre-readers, who's read everything, says, you know, you got this story wrong. I said, what do you mean I got the story wrong? I'm the one who made the story, you know? And they're like, well, when you had it in this other book, you told it differently. So it just happened to be that the book in question wasn't yet published through my current publisher, and I knew that they were going to bring out that book again. So I said, well, when it comes around again, I'll rewrite it in the first book so it matches the new one.
Yeah, I had one of my beta readers reach out to when she was giving me her feedback, and she said, who is Chloe? And I'm like, what are you talking about, who is Chloe? I don't have a character named Chloe. And she's like, you have, just all of a sudden, you have Chloe did whatever. And I remembered I had named a character Chloe in the very beginning, but decided that name didn't work at all and thought I had changed it everywhere in the book, and thank goodness she caught it. But so I had
I have
just
done
out
the
of
same
just
thing.
Boom in the middle.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about. I have done the same thing where I've made a change in the name, and thank God the editors caught it, because I go back through and try to make sure I change every instance, but sometimes where you have a possessive or something like that, it slips through. You know, when you're trying to do the find and search kind of thing.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
find and replace. Yeah.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, I fell in that kind of danger zone myself, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, or you discover, a friend of mine discovered she had spelled, a name that she was using could be spelled a couple of different ways, and somewhere along the line she had changed the spelling of it. Well, then she decided to change the name of the character, and she did the search and find, and it found all of the ones that she had spelled the way she was spelling it in the find. But she had these other ones that she had
yep.
not. So she had this whole series of where this person, for this whole stretch of the book, she had changed the spelling of a name and was in there. Of course, they found it. That was pretty blatant. But she said, you always have to be really super careful about that kind of stuff. Even one misspelling can
mm-hmm.
screw things up.
Yeah,
for
and,
you.
And those readers, they'll let you know if they catch something like that. Like, surprise.
They will.
Who's
yeah,
this?
They will indeed.
Hey,
I actually yeah. had, I actually, in Sandman, the storm, I had originally named the storm one name, and then I decided that I had a character with the same first letter. And so I thought, well, I better change the name of the storm because I don't want it to have the same first letter because, you know, they say don't name your characters with the same sound or first letter or whatever. So I thought, well, I better do that for the storm, too. So I named the storm. It's Hurricane sitting off the coast, and I named it Anna. No big deal. I go on everything. My editors look at it. It goes to typesetting. They do their thing, whatever. It comes out. It's out there, and my daughter, my oldest daughter, she said, I love your book, but just one thing. And I said, what's that? And she said, this book takes place in November. There is no way on the Outer Banks of North Carolina in the Atlantic Ocean that in November you are getting your first name storm, which would be an A. So my storm should have been named, you know, like something with an S or a whatever later in the alphabet. So just those kind of really what you feel like are insignificant things for your readers can turn out to be super significant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I have the same thing that happened with Gunfire. It's like I read one review of one of my books and I was talking about you can tell that this author has you know, only seeing guns fired in movies because people don't react this way or you have this or that and the other. And I'm like, huh. So I
yeah.
made sure, like, for the follow-up novels, I did a lot more research.
Yeah.
And you know, how it smells, how it feels, how it, you know, and try to get it more right.
Yeah, it's crazy what they'll pick up on.
Yeah, I had,
oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
even though
it's... There was an author friend who in one book was talking about how had one of his characters talk about at the end of the book how they were glad that it was a you know the, or the, that a well they they were being cared for by a paramedic, and they said they wish it had been a doctor, that they probably need to get a doctor. And somebody read the book and was saying, you know, actually a paramedic is more what they need in that situation, because paramedics know how to blah, 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 blah. And so when it went from hardcover to paperback, they went in and rewrote it and fixed it, so it was more in tune with what the paramedics had come back and complained about.
Well, see, Michael, that's why it's good when you have a spider centaur creature in your book or something like that, because, you know, nobody can tell you exactly how it's supposed to be. It's like
I get away with everything. All the time from the spider centaurs, and they are very upset with me.
Well, after we get off the air, I'm calling you right away, because I've always wanted to, you know, meet one of these creatures. So, yeah. Fantastic. But, yeah. But no, the accuracy thing, yeah, that does come up, and that's part of the thing about being an author, of course, is you know, the research phase. And then I don't know if you heard, Tammy, but Daniel had just gotten back from a trip to Chicago, where he went in person to research some things that factor into his next novel. Talk a little bit about the research approach that you have, if there was some intensive research you had to do for the novel.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Several different things there are EMTs in the novel, and they're from that area, that small area. So they don't have their own firehouse. They don't have their own emergency vehicle. They don't have their own emergency team. So they're part of the Dare County emergency team. And so I had to reach out to Dare County and talk to them about who would be the first person on the scene. How would they come on the scene? I had them in, to begin with, I had them in an ambulance coming to the original scene of destruction. And the Dare County person said to me, no, that's not what's going to happen. Probably they're going to be in like an SUV or something, because they're volunteers. So they're coming from their home, and they're not going to originally be in an ambulance for the most part. One or two might, but your first people on the scene are probably going to be in an SUV or something like that. So I had to change that, and I had to learn what would a person do when they come to a scene like that? What would an EMT do? I'm not an EMT. I don't know any EMTs. So I had to do interviews and research and find out what that person would do. You know, what would they be wearing? So I found out they would have steel-toed boots. They would have probably white or blue windbreakers. They would have really super deep pockets where they could hold triage kits and cutters and, you know, all the things. And they have black tags and yellow tags and green tags. And you actually put a tag on each person that you come across, whether they're slightly hurt, medium hurt, or dead. And so all these things that I didn't know about what an EMT would do when they got to the scene. So I had to do that. But I also in the novel have cadaver dogs. I have a dog that they bring to the scene to find additional bodies in the sand, and I had to research how these dogs learn, because part of one of the scenes takes place in the training center for the dogs. So I had to learn what would that look like, what would be in a training center for these dogs. They actually have like a body farm where they train these dogs. So it's like a huge plot of land where they have decaying bodies in different stages of decay. Yeah, they have several of them in different places.
Did you ever get a chance to meet Doc up there? Or?
No, I did not. I only talked on the phone to them, and it wasn't up there. It was actually someone in Colorado that I was able to speak to. And so they talked to me about how many receptors a dog has in their nose compared to a human. You know, just all these fascinating facts about why a dogs can actually, because of the sensitivity of their nose, they can actually smell through layers and layers and layers of concrete, or it's just fascinating. But one of the things that I tell students now, I actually teach, one of the things that I tell my students is you can't skimp on that research piece, because that's where you're going to find your really interesting details, even some of the, like, the gross kind of things. Like when you find a body in a dune, it that has been in this dune for years and has had water encroaching, and what would it be like? What would you find? Would you only find, at what point would you only find bones? At what point would you not find bones anymore? At what point would there still be some flesh left on the body? At what point, you know, all of those things that you, a Google search is not going to really delve into those minute details like that.
Yeah, because I'm working on one where I've been doing searches and everything for a particular item and trying to find out as much information as I can about this item, because it'll be used in a book. And I can't find when the item was made, when it was, you know, when the company actually existed or anything else on just Google search. So I've,
yeah.
The other search that I have found out about is one where it's more of a professional type search with Google, and, you know, which I
yeah,
just Google brain
Scholar.
Dead. Yeah, Google Scholar will actually
yeah,
give
Scholar.
You more information on things than Google search ever thought about giving you when it comes
yes.
to doing research.
Yeah, I use Google Scholar a lot. That's one of the, when my students research, they're not allowed to use Google, not because Google doesn't have good information, but because they need to learn to research in places that have peer-reviewed solid research that has been verified to be true research. So they have to use libraries, or they have to use Google Scholar. It's one of the things that they're allowed to use. So I use that quite a bit. But I also tell them that there's nothing better than talking to someone who does it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can tell you things that you're not going to find anywhere else. They're going to tell you the little details. Oh, this one time I was at a scene and there were, you know, these little earwigs crawling out of the ear of the, you know, the just things that will make your writing more believable and more real that you're not going to be able
right.
to find without actually talking to someone.
Well, that, you know, that's the reason that you go to different places and, you know, look and see what's actually there and what, you know, what you need, what information you need for your writing. Because
yes.
you won't need everything that you find. And if you put everything
no.
that you find into a book, then, you know, they don't need to read that. They need to read an encyclopedia.
True that.
Plus, ride-alongs are just cool.
Yeah.
Plus, tax, you know, write-offs are even better.
Yes, they are.
the one benefit of being a writer, the tax write-off. Yes. I wish I was doing well enough that, yeah, I'd have a need to scrape up every tax write-off that I could. But
yeah, no kidding. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
It is an advantage, and yeah, if you're listening, writers, there's an awful lot that you can make use of as far as the write-offs. No joke. Yeah, definitely talk to your tax accountant on that, because that's one perk of being a writer. We have plenty of negatives we've talked about, but that is a positive.
Yeah.
See, like, you know, if you're doing a book and everything, and it happens to, you know, consist that most of the story is in Paris, and you have to go to Paris to find out about it and everything and do research, then that is a write-off, you know.
Yep. It is.
Yeah, I'm hoping Michael sets his next one in Japan, so, yeah, we can all take a trip there, and I can finally see Japan in person, and I have to be there because, of course, you know, I work with Michael, and so it'll be absolutely necessary for me to go. No,
yeah,
it does.
Yeah, that'd
handy.
Be nice.
I
did set part of a book in Japan, but I had to
luckily I have friends in Japan who could tell me all this stuff, but I would love to see it in person sometime.
Well, I was going to say, we need to do like Daniel did, and we need to go in person and check it out. I mean, I did set one of my novellas in a land based on medieval Japan, so I have an author reason to go myself, too. So, yeah, we need to combine forces and get ourselves a good time.
There you
right
go.
Now.
Yeah.
Writer's cruise in Japan.
Right.
And then after you leave Japan and everything, you know, because – your other books are fantasy and everything, you need to go and research, like, you know, for in case that you are going to make a movie or anything like that, you know, New Zealand and, you know, Australia and stuff like that, you know,
right.
zip down
yeah.
there since you're already on that side of the world, you know.
We need
well,
to visit the Shire.
Yeah, hey, mm-hmm. we're talking thrillers, though. New Zealand and Australia have some exotic elements for use in thrillers, especially with all the little critters running around Australia. You might be able to make use of some stuff for your thrillers there in the future.
That's true.
Jamie.
That's true.
Yeah.
Everything in Australia wants to kill you.
Yeah, everything wants to kill you in Australia. Yeah.
I'm not sure I want to go there to research if everything wants to kill me.
Yeah. Well, some people have managed to survive. We have some author friends.
It's like every time I hear about the most poisonous thing or the most, you know, the biggest shark or whatever, it's always in Australia.
Wow.
It's yep. It is that yeah. And they have of course the yeah. They even have saltwater crocodiles. So I mean how dangerous can it
yeah.
possibly get?
Yeah.
But as far as so getting on to a little bit to some of your experience as an you mentioned you had done short fiction before, but this is of course your first product, you know, and you know, we do try to get authors on the show to understand, yeah, there is a business side to it. In your first year as after getting the book out, what are some of the challenges of promoting? What does your publisher expect from you? What are you doing as an author? Live events, signings. Tell us a little bit about what your experience and approach has been for the marketing of the book now that it's out.
Oh yeah, well actually it came out in December, and even pre it coming out, what I learned from others who came before me is that you have to start marketing for yourself even before. And I'm with a smaller press, and so they don't do, if you're self-published or you're with a smaller press, or even if you're with a large press in today's world, you have to do so much of the marketing yourself. My
mm-hmm.
publisher, she does some things, certainly she has her hand in it, but for the most part it's up to me to make sure that I get the word out. And that started even before the debut of the novel. So as much as 6 months before, I had built my webpage and started getting followers by doing blogs, blog postings, and focusing on other authors and trying to build content that others would be interested in learning about. I'm an English instructor by trade, so one of my focuses on the blog is writing, because that's what I've been trained to do, so I can connect that to my novel. And I think you have to figure out what you do well and try to connect that to build a following ahead of your book, or during or after, whenever, but especially ahead to get started. So I had I did the web page and created the blog and started doing some of that ahead of time to build followers there. I created a Twitter presence about a year ago, and I have about 3,000 followers now, which for some people is very low and for others is super high, but it's with a year of building, I consider it a pretty decent place to be after a year. But you have to start building that following, and I have Instagram and I have Facebook. I have a Facebook author page. I have Author Central on Amazon. I have a Goodreads author profile. Social media is huge. You have to focus on social media. I post something somewhere on social media every single day. And I tell people one of the big things that you have to remember is you can't just throw your book out there every day and say, please buy this, please buy this, please buy this, because people just stop listening to you. You have to create a brand. You are your own brand. The book is not your brand. You are your brand. So you have to figure out what you're good at and what is in your book that you can bring out that will help others. Because if you help others, they're going to want to support you. So you can't just say, buy me, buy me, buy me. Instead, you have to use tools like Canva and create little pictures with, like one of the ones I just recently put out is a foot sticking out of the sand. And it actually is a picture that we took at the beach of one of my kids' feet coming out of the sand and their legs covered with the sand. But I played with it with the filter so that it looks like, you know, someone could be buried in the sand, you know, like a body in the sand, and then put the picture on it that has to do with then what I was telling people was use what's around you to bring out something in your book. And for me, one of the things is on the beach, what they're finding is they're finding these bodies from the serial killer. And so you have to then show how to use Canva or how to use whatever to do these things. Or I do writer's tips because, again, writer or English instructor. So I do grammar tips, possessive. Say you said something about possessives earlier. So I might do just a little post on possessives and how to search for that in your own work. And then just occasionally I try to fit in, well, I try to fit in a mention of Sandman wherever I can. Or if someone says, can anybody recommend a thriller? Well, of course, I'm going to throw Sandman's name in the ring because it's a thriller and I want you to read it. So you have to find places to be able to slide the name of your book in to try to get people to view these. I also ask people, I put my book in free little libraries to get the word out. And I've actually had people come back and come onto my author website because they found my book in a free little library and they read it. And I put inserts in there that has my author webpage on it. Please come support me on my author webpage. If you like this, follow me for future updates, et cetera, et cetera. And I ask, one of the big, big, big things I would tell your listeners, if you have an author that you love, ask your local library to carry the book. That is because when a library buys your book, they typically don't buy one at a time. They buy 5 at a time or 10 at a time. So it not only benefits readers who may not otherwise read your book and spread the word for you, it also benefits the writer in that they get to sell more than one book at a time to a place. Go to your local community colleges, your local universities. Ask them to promote your book. My book has a lesbian character. So I went to local LGBTQ and asked them to put it on their shelves. You have to think outside the box, I think, for promoting purposes. I actually am going to a conference in July, and they asked if and I'm on a panel. I'm on two of the panels, and I'm doing a reading for them. And so they said to me, do you want to put something in our goodie bags? And typically what you find in the goodie bags are a postcard or a bookmark or something like that. And I thought, I don't want to do the same thing that everybody else does. So I started searching around to see what I could do that might be a little bit different. And I came across an ad for weddings that was fortune cookies for weddings. And I thought, well, if you can do a fortune cookie for a wedding, I can do a fortune cookie for my book. So when you break open the fortune cookie, the little fortune inside says, you will buy a psychological thriller. And then on the back, it has TammyBird.com, Sandman, psychological thriller, or whatever it says exactly. So you have to think about, always be thinking about how to promote, always.
No, that sounds like, yeah, great idea. Yeah, because I was listening to you talk about, yeah, the swag that people have, and sometimes you see some really clever stuff, yeah, out there, and it sounds like you're one of the people that comes up with those kind of things. That is awesome. And yeah, the live events, yeah, I've always thought those are, you know, some of the most effective places for you know, definitely even far more so than online for connecting with new readers and that kind of thing. So that's
absolutely.
That is
do
very
readings
cool.
At bookstores. Mm-hmm. I did last night, actually. I was at a local bookstore here, and that's, I also tell people, take advantage of your indie booksellers, your indie bookstores, support them. And take advantage of them for events. Don't just try to get into like the Barnes and Nobles. Although it's fine if you can get in those places, that's great. But even the indie bookstores, we were at a local indie bookstore, three of us, and also look for other local authors. Reach out to them, build those connections. I went with two other local authors last night, and we did a panel, female agency, and women writers over 40 and female agency was the title of the panel. And we all write in different genres, but our connection was we all have strong female leads in our books. And so we took advantage of that. We said, what do we all have in common that we could talk about at a panel? So we weren't just sitting there reading our books and talking about our books. We were talking about this thing that all of our books had in common, these strong women. And we had a great showing, and it's those types of things are not even about how many books you sell at the event. Again, we signed books for people after and stuff, but it's not really about how many books you sell at the event. It's about getting your name out into the community. So
right.
Those kind of events are super important.
Another thing that you're talking about on being in the independent bookstores and stuff like that over Barnes and Noble. One of the things that, you know, that I did Barnes and Noble a few times right when my book came out. And Stephen, tell them the problem that you have with that when they don't sell all the books.
Oh man, it's a nightmare sometimes for a publisher, because what always happens is, you know, when it's a larger chain like Barnes & Noble, they'll think nothing about ordering like 30, 40 copies of a book and when it's a new author. And if you do all right, you know, and you sell 10 or 15 books, which is, you know, that's a good showing, you know, if you're doing signing and you're a newer author. And the thing is, though, that other 25 copies – always gets sent back as a big box of returns, and I tell you that gets really pricey on a publisher pretty quick when that happens multiple times, and sometimes it's with the smaller bookstores, it's like they'll either work with you a little more closely on the estimate where they're only bringing like, you know, 20 copies, or they will let you kind of consign for the day where you sell out of your own stock. And then at the end of the day, it's yours. It's not going to go back to the Ingram system as a return. So sometimes the indie bookstores are actually a little more small press, self-publisher friendly. Cause it hurts either way for a self-published author. Same thing.
Absolutely.
Happens.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I found with the indie, they'll only order, you know, 15 copies. And if you sell 10 and there's 5 left, a lot of times they'll leave them on their shelf for 3 months. And whatever doesn't sell in a 3-month period, then you just come back and you pick up and you take with you. And if they sell, you bring them some more.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those big stores, they want you move product quick, or if it doesn't move quick, then you get that fun box dumped on your porch.
And that's
not fun.
Yeah, one of the events that I went to, they had a double table up there, and it was stacked up about 6 books high, book to book to book to book, filling the whole top of the table. And you're like,
oh.
There is no way that. And the thing about it, it looked impressive and everything. You got this big pile of books sitting there and everything. That, you know, you're like, damn, they have a lot of, you know, inspiration with me. And then they tell me, Oh, yeah, the college is not in session right now that, you know, feeds this bookstore all the time. They're on break.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so you ordered this many books. You knew that the college, that all the college kids would be the ones coming in here to buy my book. And, yeah, who should I kill now?
Right.
Yeah, yeah, the worst I did was in Cincinnati one time, and Michael and I did a signing with another author up in Cincinnati, and it was the three of us together. So they each one of us they overordered copies on. So yeah, when that sucker came back, the returns, it was like, oh my God, that was a kick in the gut for sure, but. But yeah, it's the indie bookstores. We got a little sidetracked by returns there, but the indie bookstores are wonderful, and they tend to really be they connect with you and in a way that, yeah, sometimes the big books are obviously they're going to have to put emphasis on, you know, mainstream, you know, New York Times best-selling titles and this and that, where sometimes I think, you know, the booksellers in the indie bookstores, I mean, they will kind of adopt a new independent author or self-published author, and they'll become your advocate in the store, and that's and that also, you know, kind of helps. So I think indie bookstores, I mean, there's a lot of advantages to getting a relationship going with one. Most definitely,
it is, and I try to help people to understand that maybe you pay a few pennies more for the book, maybe you even pay a dollar more for a book, but you're supporting your community too when you do that. It's not just about supporting a big bookseller who couldn't care less about your money. You're supporting someone who has chosen to be a part of your community, and we need to support that, I think, just in
mm-hmm.
general.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we need to support the bookstores, period, in general, because, you know, it is, they're trying to die out still.
Yes.
And, you know, the big bookstores are definitely dying away, and, you know, have been for several years now.
The big chains.
The big chains.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the mom and pops are getting, you know, where they're getting a foothold in again. But, you know, that is, I don't care, you know, I like for them to go to the mom and pops, but if they don't have that mom and pops there, go to the bookstore, see what's out there, see what you want to read.
Yes.
And everything.
Yeah. But then sometimes you get creative, like Mr. West, who I'm in awe of, has got a microbrewery restaurant place up there in Indianapolis that sells his entire catalog at the place. I'm like, I would love
wow.
to have all my stuff sold at a cool microbrewery or bourbon distillery.
Yeah, no
that
kidding.
That's my dream. But Michael, yeah, he's achieved it, and so it can happen. But yeah, sometimes you gotta get creative where you actually get a retail spot. And yeah, Michael definitely can talk on that one.
Yeah, it's you know, you just have to. It's really cool sometimes the connections you make at different, you know, by appearing at events and whatnot, and you never know where those connections might lead. As we were talking about, there's a microbrewery that does sponsorship and connection with several of the conventions, and you know, they're basically around the corner from me, and they have asked me to come out and do workshops there before and whatnot, because they're very, you know, horror centric. You know, they just came up to me at an event and says, we need to get your books into the tap house. I'm like, okay.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. So it's, you never know what, by just, you know, putting yourself out there, what can come of it.
And do they
That's
sell
true.
Well out of there?
They different times of year. I mean, the closer you get to Halloween, obviously,
right.
the better they sell. But no, they've sold several. That, you know, every time I go in there, they've sold some. So
that's great.
Yeah, they pay them in beer and barbecue. I think.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I could get into that myself.
Yeah, this year should be a good one because Michael's got a long-awaited new title and a series coming out. So this should be you should get a dessert as well with your meal this year.
I'll just be glad to have it done. That'll be my reward enough.
Yeah. But no, I'm looking forward. All joking aside, though, that is awesome that Michael's got that. And yeah, you do have to think. I think outside the box sometimes, not traditionally, because I mean, I was just referencing bourbon though. I've done a books and bourbon event that turned out to be one of my best of the year at a Kroger Wine and Spirits that I had arranged with the store manager. So sometimes, I mean, yeah, you don't go to traditional venue.
Well, another thing,
necessarily to come up
another thing
with something.
Especially for the especially for the horror authors out there, another thing to consider is September, all the little Halloween and costume shops pop up and all the abandoned strip mall shops, you know. So it's, you know, go in there and talk to the managers and see if they can move a few books for you.
Yeah.
On consignment and whatnot.
That's a great idea.
Just stuff like
psychological thrillers.
Well, and especially and with the thrillers and the mystery books too. I know there's several places in town here that do the murder mystery dinners and whatnot. And so, you know, go to those places and see if they'll be willing on those nights that they have the murder mystery dinners to offer your book as well, since you have a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a great idea. I'm totally stealing that.
Yeah. Cause
you'll see, like I put mine into historic homes and historic landmarks and stuff like that. That sell anything, gift shops.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got a period. I mean, also Tammy knows. Yeah, Daniel's stuff is Victorian era set. So yeah, he's got something that definitely has a historical presence and things.
Nice.
There's a lot of options for that tied in with that, and he's definitely doing that. It's definitely fitting in good.
Good deal.
But I guess of all of us though, I mean, you've got, I mean, a genre that, you know, one could more or less call fully mainstream. I mean, you've got like a broader palette of options as far as for, you know, the size of the reader market for thrillers. I mean, definitely it's a big market. So I guess there's some advantages to that. And I guess there's some challenges to that with, just the number of authors and titles that come out in that genre, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely.
So
I've got to read it because of the fact that, back when I was younger, I read Sandman Comics, which I actually had my comic book store that was named Sandman Comics. And then my nickname was Sandman when I played golf because, that's where I was at most of the time, was on the beach.
Nice.
So, I've got to read it sometime.
That sounds awesome. And I mean, you had mentioned the cover earlier, and I love the cover. Love the multi-hued kind of like stormy sky that you've got over the ocean too on that cover. That is a nice touch by your designer there.
Yeah, I think she did a great job on the cover.
And I also noticed too. I'll bring it up here. What was it like working with two editors? Because I noticed there's two editors credited on your book.
Yes, it was interesting. They both had. I worked with one editor specifically because she was an EMT in a past life, and so she edited very much for content because my main character is an EMT. And so a lot of her editing was very specific to that. And then the other editor was a general editor for the press. And so she did the general editing for it. And they both had very very similar and different things to say in the editing process. I would say that the one who had a background as an emergency worker had more detailed changes that she wanted to see made and some different things to be fleshed out, where the other content editor was more focused on, in, you know, the things like, do you have any plot holes? Did you have a dog here and now the dog's gone? You know, some of those types of things. Or there's not enough connection in this section. I need for you to
go back.
There
needs to be more dog.
Yes, there needs to be more dog. More dog here. So it was very interesting, and they gave very different, but still similar types of comments throughout. So it was fun. It was nice to work with both of them. One of the things I didn't realize before I started this journey was just how much time it takes to get from idea to holding a book in your hand. I had idea of all of the steps that you have to go through. And I think a lot of people are in that same boat. They don't understand just how long it takes for that process.
But now, it didn't happen that much that long ago, so you probably still are in the excitement vibe of it. But isn't it awesome when you get that box and it's your first novel and you open up your first physical novel published for the first time?
That is
something.
Yeah, I hope that every single time I open that box, I feel that same feeling.
I get super excited to this day, and I just got done with my 15th print book, but just to give you some comfort, it's still exciting.
Good. I hope that it always is, because that the adrenaline from that can keep you going through all of the marketing and all of the face-to-face meetings with people and all of the going into bookstores, all of putting yourself in uncomfortable positions to sell your book afterwards. I don't know about you guys. I'm quite an introvert as a general rule. I mean, I love to talk about writing, and I can do something like this where I'm talking about what I love to do. But when you go in and there's, you know, 25 or 30 people staring at you, and you have to make sure that you're saying the right things and that you're answering the right way and that you're not offending anyone, and that if no one's talking to you, you go and find someone to talk to. And, you know, all of those very extroverty kind of things, it takes opening that box and getting that excitement to be able to put yourself out there over and over again to do that.
So that's true. And a lot of authors that, you know, may come off as extroverts or more omniverts, where they, you know, can turn on the jets for like the event, but then, they have to go cocoon for a while later because it taxes you. I mean, and I'm sure that Michael and Daniel both can, you know, reflect as I do, you know, that it's, after a day at a convention on the floor at the table, you need that decompress badly.
Yeah,
you know,
usually that,
sure.
that Monday after a weekend con, I'm worthless, basically.
Well, I'm not worthless, except for the fact that I've worn myself out for spending out so much energy for 2, 3, 4 days of whatever the event is.
Also, it depends on the type of convention, because I've been to, you know, writers' conferences, writers' conventions, where it's the exact opposite, where you get home and after being around so much creative energy, you're energized, and you've got so many ideas that you were kicking around with people all weekend long that you just have to Imaginariums like that. You know, you get home from Imaginarium and sometimes you just dig in. But if you're at a convention where you're on your feet all day for, you know, 12 hours a day for for 3 days, signing books
too.
And shaking hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love it. It's fun. I tell my wife all the time, which, you know, that I truly feel alive a lot of times at conventions, which she says is very sad. But but I feel like I'm in my element at a convention. But yeah, if you're on 24/7, it does take a toll on you. Once the adrenaline wears off.
Yeah,
Tammy, if you ever see Michael at a convention. Oh, I was going to say quickly, if you ever see Michael at a convention, I promise you, you will see this mischievous, devious little look in his eye. He gets this gleam, and I only see it when he's in his element. But, yeah, something happens. And so, yeah, I know what he's talking about, what he's about being alive there, because you can see it in him.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, and it's very interesting that if I'm at a conference and I'm accepting someone's energy, then I'm very energized when I come home and ready to go. But if I'm at a conference and I'm the one who's giving the energy to the others,
right.
If I'm the one that has to be on, then when I
right.
get home, I need to cocoon.
Yeah.
So it,
right.
it just depends on which of those roles I'm playing at that particular convention.
Yeah. I think that a lot of times if I'm at a convention where I'm on a lot of panels, it's different than one where you're at your table for most of the time. Because you do get that time. Number one, you're off your feet, which is always good. But then you get to have that, kind of interplay, not only with the audience, but with the other panelists. You're kind of feeding off of each other. At that point, whereas you don't have to, and I've been on some panels, believe me, where people thought that they had to, but you don't have to carry the whole show by yourself.
Yeah, there's some people like Scott Sandridge who we work with at Simstar Press. He's worked with us. He's done like 8 panels in a day at a convention, and I do not understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
How he does that. Because, when I've done back-to-back panels, I've started to get my brain fried sometimes. Yeah.
Whew. Yeah, I would be under a table
panels.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Sometimes back-to-back panels, you're like, okay, I'm going where now? I'm doing what?
Yeah.
I remember one convention I was at where I was going to be there and Bob Freeman was going to be there.
Nice.
And Bob Freeman had to bow out last minute for some emergency, and he had to bow out last minute. So I contacted the organizers and I said, I'm going to be there. I said, if I'm able to help out on something that where Bob was going to be and I'm not on another panel, I'd be willing to step in for Bob so that you don't have to reorganize everything.
Yeah.
They plugged me in for every panel he was doing and all the ones that I was originally scheduled for.
Oh,
so
yep.
No.
I ended up doing probably a good 20 panels that weekend.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
No,
that's what happens when you tell a programming person, "Hey, use me." Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah. luckily, I had really good minions to watch my table that weekend, and that was a bright side to it. Is that because I was on so many panels and was exposed to so many people, I sold a lot of books that weekend.
Yeah, there is that.
That's a flip side to it.
But
yeah,
that was one of those weekends where when I got home, I was dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most I've done at a convention is like 6 or 7 over the 3 days, and that's enough. Yeah, I don't really want to tackle more, especially when I got a table or something like that. Yeah, that's plenty good. Can't quite do that 8 a day thing or anything like that. That's a little,
no,
definitely
I cannot
a
even
much.
Imagine.
That was rough.
As a newbie, I've done 2. In a day, and that to me was like,
oh, that's good enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you schedule a couple out a day over like a 3-day weekend, yeah, you'll get your fill. That's definitely for sure.
Well, probably the worst panel experience I ever had was I was on a panel that was talking about, you know, how to write an action scene, which I thought was going to be a great panel because, you know, I write a lot of action scenes. And so I thought, you know, it was like going to be about, you know, how do you structure it? How do you pace it? You know, what's a good way to approach making it, you know, exciting in the writing process. And then when I get there, I find that I am on a panel with an ex-Green Beret and an explosives expert.
Oh, dang.
Nice.
And so I end up sitting there basically the whole hour just kind of like my jaw on the table just listening to them talk about, you know, how if you're this close to an explosion, how it would rip the bones out of your body, you know. And all
oh.
You know, I'm basically taking notes the whole time. And at one point, like, we're like 45 minutes into this 50-minute panel, and at one point one of them looks at me and says, "Do you have anything to add?"
Nope, not a damn thing.
No.
Yeah, I'm like, I am severely underqualified to be on this panel.
Well, your prose is good. You could have, you know, suggest some good phrasing, you know, or something. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I thought it was going to be about mainly, but no, it was about the intricacies of combat and explosions. So
hopefully
well,
they didn't demonstrate their techniques on you during the middle of the panel.
Yeah.
They didn't like use you as a dummy for the example or something like that.
Right. I'm like, how in the hell did I get on this panel?
Oh man, that's too funny. Man, yeah, that is funny. Oh man. But so what, coming up in about 8.5 minutes left of the show, I wanted to get to what you have coming up appearance or event-wise so you could promote that a little bit, Tammy. And what part of the country do you do your events in? That's another cool question.
Well, I'm in the Raleigh, North Carolina area. So most of what I've been doing has been in this kind of general area. I am going to be in California in June, around June 15th. So if you guys know any place around there that lets people come and speak and do things, I'm totally down with that. But
are you going to be in the Los Angeles area?
We're going to be in San Francisco.
Okay. Well,
so in that area.
If you're ever in the Los Angeles area, there's a bookstore called Dark Delicacies.
Okay.
And they cater to horror and thrillers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the place that you'd wanna talk to them about, you know, maybe doing an event or at least dropping off some books or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm writing the name of it down. I'll look them up.
And they just did a big event because they lost their lease, and they moved through the public support.
Oh, no.
They did a whole public campaign and were able to move the store to a different location. So it's got that much support in the community. So
wow, nice.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
that's really nice.
Yeah,
Well, I just did, like I said, I just did a panel last night on female agency. I've got something coming up at a small indie bookstore here, Quail Ridge. I'm working with them on either I'm going to do something by myself or put together a panel of local authors. I'm not sure which way we're going to go with it yet, but I'm going to be doing something there on marketing before, during, and after. And then I've got a couple other of similar types of things in the works for other indie places around here. We have a place in Asheville, North Carolina, which is a little bit of a ways from here. In September, they've asked me to be a part of that. I haven't decided yet for certain if I'm going to do that, just because of distance and because I teach during the week. So I don't have an opportunity just to go somewhere and do things. again, if somebody wants to pay me lots of money to sit at home and write, I would go anywhere they wanted me to go to do things. But because I don't have that luxury, like many of us don't, I have to do it on the weekends and close by. So those
right.
are some of the things I have coming up. I have the conference in Pennsylvania that's coming up in July, where I'll be on a couple of panels. It's a GCLS, it's a Golden Crown Literary Society. They have a conference that's being held in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I will
yes,
be on
yes.
several panels there, and I'll be doing a reading, and we'll have a table and book signing and that kind of stuff there.
Say hi to Sally Ann Monty while you're there. She's actually director of marketing for them, and she is a sponsor of our Imaginarium convention and a spotlighted guest, and she's definitely a wonderful friend with us, and she's yeah, she was just on the show just was it a couple weeks ago, everybody?
Was it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, yeah. So, definitely tell her hi.
She and I are Facebook friends. I haven't met her in person yet, but we've talked about actually trying to kind of run into each other at the conference because –
Well, tell her you were on our show tonight. That's a small world story, yeah, because she was just on the show, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll tell her.
Well, I'll give you two other conferences that you might be interested in, considering what you write. One of them is BoucherCon. This year is going to be in Dallas, October 31st through November 3rd. And, you know, they're going to have a bunch of no-name authors there and stuff. You know,
no-name authors at BoucherCon, yeah.
Like James Patterson will be there, you know, Deborah Combrie, you know. Just,
yeah, those
just people
little
that you've
people.
Never heard of before.
Yeah, all those little people.
But, you know, and then Killer Nashville is one, it's over here in Nashville that it is set up for your type of writing.
Oh,
that's
nice.
That's the whole thing. It is set up for that suspense and, you know, noir and, you know, those type, you know, everything from cozy mysteries to, you know, noir and suspense and stuff like that.
Psychological.
I'll look
killers.
It up.
Yeah, everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, good stuff. That's not too bad either,
and that's
from the Carolinas. Yeah, it's not too bad
at
all.
No,
that's
the Nashville one's not bad at all. That wouldn't be too fun.
And that one's held in the middle of the summertime, basically. So,
mm-hmm.
you know.
There we go.
I can give you an exact date on it in just a second here.
And while you're doing that, Tammy, while he's looking that up, go ahead and give your ways for fans to connect with you or people that would like to check your stuff out, social media or website, whatever you want to emphasize.
Well, the easiest thing probably to remember is just tammybird.com, TammyBird.com. That's to my webpage. And you can find all of my other social media connections
mm-hmm.
on that page. Tammy Bird on Twitter or Instagram or Author Central for Amazon or Pinterest if you're a penner or all the things.
Holly will talk to you for hours about that.
Yeah.
Wait till I tell her you're a penner. Yeah, because she loves that one. Oh, man.
I'm a penner. I love that. I actually have when I was writing Sandman, I had a private folder where I would put pictures and ideas and pictures of the beach and the strip of sand and kind of plot things out, and I put it in a private folder. And then when I released Sandman, when it debuted, I opened that folder to the public. So
mm-hmm.
that was kind of fun. But I love penning.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, do you have that date for her or contact?
Killer Nashville will be August 22nd through the 25th. And it'll be right outside. It's held at a motel right outside of Nashville. So you're
okay.
not downtown Nashville. You're
yeah.
you're out in the suburbs a little bit. And, you know, they have the Silver Falchion Award and the Claymore Award. It's two book awards that they give out every year. For different categories and stuff.
All right, I'm going to look that one up.
So,
Very cool.
I think that they've already closed down the submission for books now for
right.
this year.
Probably, yeah, if it's in August.
But yeah, it's a good convention. There's a lot of good people there. Clay mm-hmm. Stafford is the one that started it. He's a movie guy and stuff like that from California, and he's moved here in Nashville and started it about 11 years ago now. So
cool.
But yeah, definitely
but,
when you're
yeah,
up
and
in
then
Pittsburgh,
you've got another one called Imaginarium up in Kentucky in October. So
yeah. yes. we're a little biased about that one for sure here. yeah, that's our baby. But yeah, definitely say hi to Sally Ann when you're up at the Golden Crown Literary Society Conference in Pittsburgh, because that is awesome. That what a small world. I'm definitely gonna drop her a note about this. That is fantastic.
Yeah, that's
so,
good stuff right there.
Yeah. But thank you so much for joining us tonight. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you about your book and everything that you're into writing wise and your path as a debut author, and we have really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you guys. This was a blast. Thank you so much for letting me come and talk to you.
Not a problem.
We'll definitely have you back for a follow up, because I have a hunch that you're going to be quite a busy writer in the future here.
Absolutely, I'm excited.
Well, if you have go ahead. I'll if there's anything else you would like to say, definitely I'll turn it over to you. But we're going to have a show next week at, of course, the usual time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Guest is Brian K. Morris. And for me, good night. And we'll let Tammy say anything that we didn't cover tonight. And Michael and Daniel, you guys take us out.
Yeah, I'm good. I just thank everyone so much. And visit me, TammyBird.com, and hook up with me. If you're a writer, I'm always down for meeting new writers. If you're a reader, I'm always down for that, too. If I can help you in any way, I'm good for that. And let's just connect, and that's it.
Appreciate you, Tammy.
Right.
And everybody have a good night. This is Daniel Dark. Signing off. Talk to you later.
Night, everybody.
Night, everybody.